We have not heard that we would have any problems. We do have within the scope of services of our financial advisors the ability to go out and seek quotes for replacement credit providers if that's necessary.
There is a competitive mechanism
that will cause this not to cost more, but hopefully less. Yes. And we're going to continue to look at ways that we might be able to hedge our exposure to increases in interest rates for our future new money bond issues.
Mike, on that one, does that mean then come and talk to the Finance Committee about if you're going to do hedging strategies? Some guidance on that?
Yes. I mean, what we really, part of the reason we're discussing this today is in order to really evaluate all of the options for strategies for hedging, we need to have discussions with potential swap dealers about other types of products rather than just traditional fixed-rate bonds. And in order to do that, we need to designate a qualified independent representative and as pursuant to the Dodd-Frank Act, and we were just going to get into that. Yeah. So just, you know, a quick overview on a swap. It's a two-party agreement with the tollway. It's between the tollway as the issuer and a swap dealer, or our counterparty. We sometimes refer to them as the counterparty, to exchange payments on predetermined dates for the agreement and under the terms of the agreement. The payments can be exchanged based upon, you know, fixed for floating or exchange of floating rates. We, the tollway, have only entered into swaps in which we exchange a floating payment, a variable rate payment, for a fixed payment. In the municipal market, these floating rates that we pay bonds, or that we pay the floating rate index in the municipal market is commonly referred to as a CIFMA index, and in the taxable market it's referred to as LIBOR or the. These swap payments, they're calculated on the basis of a notional amount. A notional amount that is equivalent to the amount of bonds that are associated with the swap. So if we have $100 million of variable rate bonds and we want to fix that rate out, we enter into a $100 million floating to fixed rate swap. And we don't actually exchange principal payments. We just exchange the interest payments, and the interest payments that are exchanged on the swap are based upon that note, what we call a notional amount. But in our case, the notional amount always matches the principal amount of the bonds. And that's just wanted to mention that to know that we aren't exchanging $100 million payments. And the swaps are executed under terms of a kind of a master agreement, standard documents that are published by the International Swap and Derivatives Association. All right, graphically, just quickly, how does that mechanism work, the synthetic fixed rate debt? Over as you face the screen, over on the left side, the tollway issues bonds, and they issue a bond that pays a variable rate, so the interest is reset every week. As I mentioned down below here, we have liquidity banks that will purchase those bonds if, for some reason, they can't be remarketed some week. Okay, that's why we need them. So we issue variable rate bonds, have an obligation to pay a variable or a floating rate. The counterparty then agrees to pay us a floating rate that isn't precisely what we pay on the bonds, but it's the municipal variable rate index, which we call the CIFMA index. It's essentially an index of highly rated municipal issuers or governmental issuers, tax-exempt issuers. And the tollway would certainly, in most cases, be that type of an issuer. That weekly rate that's paid to us by the counterparty is very close to the rate that the tollway pays to the bondholders on a weekly basis. It can be a few basis points different, but it's very close. So those two payments kind of cancel out. What the tollway's left with essentially then is the fixed rate that we're required to pay to the counterparty in that swap agreement. Again, why would we enter into this kind of agreement? The structure itself, in total, when you include all the costs of the fixed rate we pay the counterparty, the cost that we're paying for the liquidity or the bank support, was less than the cost of borrowing fixed rate at the time. But as I mentioned, there are some risks associated with it, and in our discussions previously, we believe that if the cost for getting into a total fixed rate structure was 50 basis points or 0.5% or less, then that's when we'd want to convert it, because we thought the risk is not worth less than that amount. So that all gets us to today's item, which is our need for a qualified independent representative. Per the Dodd-Frank Act, there are new business conduct rules that are being imposed upon swap dealers. Essentially, part of those rules require that the swap dealer act in a way or manner that's in the interests of the special entity. And the special entity that they could do a swap agreement with, those include primarily governmental issuers, federal agencies, states, state agencies, cities, counties, and so forth. So essentially, Congress, Dodd-Frank Act, the Commodities Future Trading Commission established a framework by which the swap dealer had a responsibility to be doing business with these entities in a way that was in their interests. Swap dealers, of course, also were looking for a way to give that responsibility back to someone else. So part of these rules allowed for a safe harbor for those dealers in that if they could certify or evidence that the party that they were doing business with, the special entity, had an independent representative, meaning independent from the swap dealer, that was knowledgeable, skilled, and well-suited to advise the issuer on these matters, then the swap dealer did not bear that responsibility any longer because we had an independent party that was doing that for us. Now, the effect of this is swap dealers won't speak to us. They won't have any discussions about these kinds of transactions or even undoing these transactions until we have in place a qualified independent representative, and they are able to execute with us this safe harbor agreement, the safe harbor letter. In our case, we had already already awarded financial advisory services to a pool of firms. There were four firms that we selected earlier. Part of that scope of services was that they would advise us on these matters. They could advise us on these matters. So the item today, what we're really asking for, is to be able to designate them formally as qualified independent representatives so that we can then move forward with this, with the analysis and with this work. That was a mouthful, but I hope some of that was.
I think you said before, because that's not an addition to the scope of work, there's no additional compensation needed for that?
There isn't additional compensation. Right, needed.
It's not needed.
Right.
And all the directors got copies of this resolution. The four firms all are qualified and have played this role or are playing this role under Dodd-Frank in other deals?
The answer, part of the process for becoming a qualified independent representative is there is a series of representations that they must sign or execute that evidence that, in fact, they have that experience. Not all of them are QIRs with other issuers as of this point. So it's possible that one or even more of the four would ultimately determine that they couldn't do that, couldn't take that designation. However, all four have indicated to us that they believe they can and want to pursue it.
So this authorization that we're seeking is really the authorization from the board to ask the question of all four and then enter into the appropriate agreements with those that can sign off on and make all the appropriate representations,
yes.
correct? But
yes.
we're going to give all four the opportunity.
Yes.
And there's no conflict of interest?
In fact, that's part of the representation, that they cannot act as our qualified independent representative if they have a business relationship that would conflict with a counterparty that would conflict with us.
And the timing on this, will you go back to the Finance Committee and let them know who actually can serve as
sure.
a qualified?
Yeah. Just a brief summary of our current debt. We have about $4.4 billion in bonded debt. About $3 billion, or 70% of that, is fixed rate. 30% is synthetic fixed rate. In our debt management policy, we're seeking to reduce that synthetic fixed rate percentage down to 25% or less. We're going to get there either through restructuring synthetic fixed rate debt, or alternatively, as we issue our new debt, we won't issue any. We'll issue fixed rate as opposed to synthetic fixed rate. I want to assure you that the current portfolio of synthetic fixed rate debt is working well. The total costs for the synthetic fixed rate debt currently range from about 4.5% to as high as 4.9%, all of them less than 5%. In the current state, when the markets when we don't have issues with banks of struggling and liquidity fees increasing, is working very well. So it's not an emergency situation, but one we're going to continue to monitor for that opportunity to reduce this exposure if it makes sense economically. But they are working well at this point. We also wanted to give you a quick overview of our current swap portfolio that's attached, essentially related to those variable rate bonds that create the synthetic fixed rate. We have 9 different swap agreements with 8 different firms, so it's a well-diversified portfolio. We don't have an huge exposure to any one firm. The mark-to-market, or the current value that we would have to pay if we were to terminate all of these swaps right now, is on the right-hand column. It totals about $150 million. If we had to terminate all these agreements right now, the reason that's a cost to terminate right now is because general level of interest rates is lower than when we entered into these swaps. So if we were to terminate them, we could either issue new bonds or enter into new swap agreements that would have lower rates of interest. So this just reflects the market value of that financial product at this time. It reflects a change in the market. Just like if you buy a treasury bond at 5%, general interest rates drop to 3%, the value of that treasury bond increases. So as we mentioned here, the tollway swap to market valuations typically decline in value when interest rates decline and increase when interest rates increase. And we wanted to note that to the extent that we actually had to terminate these, much of that negative valuation of the derivative product, the swap, would be mitigated by the fact we'd be borrowing to pay the borrowing to replace that debt at a lower cost. So, what are we, one final slide on synthetic fixed rate debt. What is the timing? What factors are we monitoring with respect to opportunities to refund the synthetic fixed rate debt, or essentially convert it to a traditional fixed rate? In this case, unlike the 2005 and 2006 bonds, 2005 and 6, we're just looking at the general level of interest rates, and as they fall, we're looking for opportunities to refund. The lower the general level of interest rates, the more opportunity for us to refinance those bonds. In this case, it really doesn't matter whether the general level of interest rates rises or decreases. What we need is for the swap market to become the swap market to be closer to the traditional bond market. These curves have to come together. And as you can see, in the kind of the bond market, which is in the blue, and the swap market, which is in the red or brown, you can see those diverged kind of during the financial crisis. They came back together for a very short time, right here, which would have been, if we had been ready and able to move in a matter of a week or two, it was probably an opportunity to do a restructuring at this point. What we're looking for is these indexes, these markets to converge. So, thank you.
Are there questions? This is very interesting. It's also very important. So I'm going to ask it again because maybe I didn't ask it right, but I would like to have an answer that I can understand. I understand in this refinancing or refunding, you're waiting for these two to converge. The question is, what's the role of the Finance Committee and how to engage them? And on the hedging, I would ask the same question. And back here, if we're talking, I don't know why you did talk about the termination of the swaps. If that were to happen, what's the timing on that and what's the role?
The termination of the swaps. The reason we put that up there is it's something that we report in our financial statements every year. We don't have any plans to terminate those swaps unless there's an opportunity to actually restructure the synthetic fixed rate debt, at which time in the current market we would be making a payment. Okay, we would be making a payment to terminate the swap.
Right, that's 150, it has to be greater than that, or some portion of that, right.
And that, again, that would be factored into the analysis of what's the overall cost of replacing that synthetic fixture. With respect to the question about how we would certainly engage, we can engage the Finance Committee by bringing back, a proposal in terms of the restructuring activities. We can also have a discussion of that even if the market isn't right on spot at the time. We could have that discussion so that there's more.
We created some parameters in the past.
We did.
We could kind of renew that discussion of, you know, creating those types of parameters, right?
Right.
And see if the parameters that we have are the right ones or if they need to be, we need to revisit those.
Yeah, we had previously discussed executing a restructuring or refinancing if we could get within 50 basis points of the current cost. So we actually had some discussion earlier this year about whether that was the right difference. We did have that dialogue discussion. It was determined that probably was about the right spread to be considering, but something we can again speak to.
And those parameters guide the hedging as well?
Those parameters do not. We haven't really developed those parameters.
I think it might be important to do that and talk to the Finance Committee about that. I understand the need for flexibility. I understand we hire financial advisors, but we also have a responsibility to make sure that that's done within the context that the board is comfortable with. So I think that would be very useful.
Yeah, we have no plans to do any hedging until we do that.
It was on the slide. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah. You indicated that the prospects for refunding improve as the two yield curves begin to converge. Would the Fed's recent announcement tend to cause that a greater convergence or a lesser convergence?
I think it's really rather neutral.
It's
caused both the markets to essentially rates in both markets to drop.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Good.
Thanks. So one quick note, I misspoke on my presentation. I wanted to make sure that those diversity numbers are 5-year diversity numbers, right back to 2008, not over the 2-year period. which certainly makes more sense, as $671 million would be far more than 24% of our spending over the last 2 years. So I apologize for misspeaking. I think that there might have also been an error on the information. I think we spent a little less on professional services than the 500 and some million indicated. It was 180.
We do issue this monthly.
Yes, that is, has all of it in there, so we apologize.
This is the Bible.
Yes, that's the Bible. So, which apparently we didn't reference as much as we could have, but so I apologize for that, but hopefully no harm, no foul. Last but certainly not least, I want to introduce Jim Wagner, our Inspector General. We've heard from him before. According to his statutes, as many of you know, he's required to give a report to both the governor's office and the board and publish a report 2 times a year on his activities, his investigations, and it is that time of year again. We appreciate his partnership. I meet with him regularly. We interact with him quite often referring cases to his office as we find them. And Jim is going to give an overview of his activities over the past 6 months.
Thank you, Christian. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I believe you have a copy of the report that was prepared and distributed fairly recently. And it is, as Christy pointed out, for the period of April 1 through September 30th of this year. Actually, it goes up to about the 19th. In order for us to get this prepared, we have to cut off our count. So it really is a little shorter than the 30th. I'm not going to go through a lot of specifics. You have the report, and it will be posted later today on our website. I will tell you just briefly, the report contains our report summaries of 4 different instances where tollway employees were dismissed for various violations. One in 13-04 was for a case of bullying, intimidation, hostile work environment, and in that case there was a criminal complaint of battery filed, which is still pending. That person was dismissed. In 13-06, the employee was actually part of a Illinois State Police task force of narcotics investigators, searched his home, found he was growing marijuana, and he was criminally charged for that activity, and he's been dismissed. In 13-14, we had an employee who had committed forgery of a document. It was actually a diploma, and was attempting to pass it off as a requirement for the position. It was discovered that the employee had done the same thing previously at the CTA and had produced a forged document there as well. That had been discovered by the Office of the Executive Inspector General. That employee resigned. And then we had 13-20. We had theft by a summer collector. He had only been employed since the end of May, but in the month of August, he admitted stealing $1,360. It was pretty blatant on his part. He was dismissed. That's been referred for criminal charges. We had an older investigation due to an anonymous letter, which we get from time to time. This one obviously came from another employee because of the detailed information that was provided with regard to 11 different employees working at our various maintenance garages. And the allegations ranged the gamut from just tardiness through not proper driver's license, not reporting arrests, and drug use. And during the investigation, 2 of the employees were dismissed, one for failing a drug test. And as somewhat as a result of that investigation, our Department of Administration sent out a notice field-wide to remind employees that they are required to notify the Department of Administration as well as their own department when they've been arrested. And it happens from time to time, more than we would like. And they are supposed to self-report that. We have to be able to determine what the arrest is for and what the outcome will be. One of the 11 named actually filed a complaint with the Office of the Executive Inspector General, which was referred back to us. And we determined in looking into it that he actually filed the complaint with them the day after he had been suspended here by the tollway for 5 days. And when we looked into his complaint, there were so many discrepancies to what he told them, to what he told us, that we eventually referred it back to the department for their action on the complaint. You'll find in the report that there were three investigations that resulted in recommendations by our department for various things that we thought could help the tollway. One of them is an older case, 11-33, and involved an employee who had been out for a period of time on workers' comp. And we got a response September 18th from executive management. We had questioned about discipline for the individual. We determined from the response that the absence had not been coded properly in the CONUS system, so that answered that question. We had recommended that instruction be given with regard to injuries that would qualify for under ADA, and actually training was conducted here at the tollway in August on that topic. We had recommended that calls for employees who are out on leave be tracked so that there would be some way to verify that the calls had been received. And we are told that administration now includes materials about tracking, and that there is an enhancement to CONUS that is going to make that easier to do. We recommended drug testing after reported injuries, and the response indicated we basically follow the U.S. Department of Transportation guidelines, but the administration also advised us that legal department is going to review and provide recommendations regarding drug testing. We recommended that any reported injury, the managers create a list of witnesses and copy any video. And it's our understanding that's been implemented, and cameras have been provided for each department. We recommended an administrative directive manual for HR procedures and be made available on Crossroads. And the issue there is that not all departments have access to Crossroads. So administration is looking into making terminals available, more available in each department. You'll find that in 12-24, the anonymous letter case, we had a couple of recommendations there that executive office monitor these employees as well as the departments monitor those employees more closely. They agreed, and then take as serious action as possible with regard to violations that are discovered. And the answer was they're going to review with legal the possibility of creating the most aggressive response. And the last one in the report refers to 1304. We got a response on September 20th to our recommendations. One was that management complete a course on training, management training, which had not been done in the past, and a program we are told is now being developed. And matter of fact, I think it's going into effect very, very quickly, very soon. We recommended that management be responsible for managing their individual departments, and that the EEO officer would not direct departments. The response agreed, but pointed out that the EEO officer may take action, but only at the direction of the executive office. We recommend departments document any questionable conduct and maintain a file in the department regarding the conduct. And the response agreed, but also indicated that records must be sent to administration for the personnel file. We recommended that any problems be immediately addressed contemporaneously with the action that required the discipline, and the response agreed unless there was a IG or EEO investigation that would supersede. We recommended that any request for records by a person under suspension be documented, and they agreed, and there is to be a toll-wide standard operating procedure in place this year. And finally, we recommended that any criminal investigation be handled by law enforcement. They agreed, but of course, there would still be the necessity for tollway to look at the policies and procedure violations. Those are the items reported. However, the last page gives you a bigger summary of things that we're handling. These are just the ones that I am required to publicly disclose. If you count up everything that we worked on during the 6 months, there's 356 matters that we handled. And by the way, it points out also that we're down one person. So I have three investigators and myself and our administrative assistant. And we handled 357 items. I think they worked pretty hard. Any questions?
I think that we certainly will have the gym available in executive session to discuss any of the personnel related items in the report. So we again really appreciate all of your hard work on behalf of not only your office but really the tollway and its board.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's all I have. I reserve the right to introduce David Goldberg later on the agenda to give an OASIS presentation. That's not going to happen.
That has been granted.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
So it sounds as if we're ready to turn to the consent agenda. I don't see any recusals this month. I just want to make sure. Okay, well then we should be able to move through quickly. And the chair of the Finance Operations and Administration Committee has walked through, I think, the highlights of this. So I think we can take Finance 6.1, items 1 and 2 together.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any recusants, abstentions? Then we have Procurement 6.2. I believe we can take all five of those items without further discussion. Is that right? Okay.
Business systems.
I'm sorry. And business systems?
No. You skipped procurement.
I'm sorry. I thought business systems. I misspoke. 6.2, procurement 1 through 5.
Oh, on our agenda. I think they're reversed.
I'm
on the agenda on the
I'm
screen.
I'm sorry.
Versus our
I'm
agenda,
looking at the
reversed.
Books. Excuse me. Okay.
Sorry.
That's my fault. I was
no
looking
insight.
At the wrong thing. Let's do business systems then 1 and 2. The JCAR rule change, I think, has been through the Customer Service Committee. Is there any further discussion that the chair wants to have on that?
No, I commented on both.
Okay, great. And then renewal of the Bridgeway training he also commented on. So may I hear a motion for 1 and 2?
Motion to approve.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Any recusals, abstentions? Then let's do procurement. We'll do try this again, 1 through 5.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? no abstentions or recusals. Engineering, we can do 1 through 4, and then you want to pull out.
I think we can do maybe a brief presentation. I think the OASIS item okay. might be taken separately. But
okay.
The two, the first two items,
first
right?
First two are new items that were added to the agenda, and I think David has the presentation.
Yep.
Would you like to do that now?
Is this where you've reserved your right?
You are the one who yes. can say whether you want to do the consent yes, agenda first or okay.
Okay,
so
let's do it. Let's do the presentation before we vote on it.
Great. So as you know and you saw from all those photos that were flashing up on the screen earlier, we're making great progress on our I-90 rebuilding and widening project. Unfortunately, as we make way for this new state-of-the-art corridor, to be built, we've come to the point when we must begin to plan for the removal of the Des Plaines Oasis. This oasis was already something that would need to be removed for the Elgin O'Hare project, but because the widening cannot necessarily take place under the oasis in the way that we would like it to, we thought we should explore and perhaps accelerate its removal so that we can do a complete refurbishment and widening of I-90. So. We know that they're an important part of our history and still an important part for some of our customers' customer experience on the tollway, but at the end of the day, we thought that it was important to really do the job right the first time on the I-90 project. So I'm going to ask that David Goldberg, either from his seat or come up, I guess whichever you prefer, kind of walk through both the Oasis closure and then an update on the parking lot rebuild. This is something that Director Wisner oversaw a lot of discussion on the OACs early on in his term on the board, and it was something that we heard from that committee was important, particularly the truck parking, which had deteriorated significantly. So, David?
Thanks, Christy. I'll just stay down here. I think the board has seen our forecast that this was coming at some point, and we're very pleased to present it as an actual item now for board action. We have two separate ones indicated on the agenda. We'll deal with them both in this presentation. The first being Des Plaines. Let's see if my clicker worked. Yep. The Des Plaines, as Christy set up, is ready to come out at this stage of the action with both Move Illinois and anticipation of Elgin O'Hare. As a quick way of background, the tollway has a 25-year lease for the entirety of the Oasis systems. That's seven Oases. There's a master leaseholder called SFI. Their lease runs through 2027. In the lease, way back, certainly before my time, and I think perhaps most of our times in this room, there was a mechanic called for in the lease to allow a recapture of a particular oasis if it became operationally necessary for the tollway. So we've obviously looked at that. The first stage in that mechanic is to give 6 months advance notice to the leaseholder, which has been done some time ago, in advance of an April 1st we'll use the phrase recapture, but basically coming back to the tollway, and that part of the lease will end. There is also a compensation formula on the board we have discussed, and that's what's been in discussion both with SFI and through council, and things have worked out rather efficiently there. And I thought I'd point out, obviously, for the tenants of SFI, which are technically subtenants to the tollway, these are your business providers in the Oasis, your McDonald's, your Subways. These are activities for SFI to be dealing with, and once we take our action today, that will start a process formally for SFI to feel comfortable and give notifications and the likes to have those tenants out of the Oasis property by April 1st. Looking to the next slide, for generally familiar, we're taking you through what section 15.1 of our master lease. As I indicated, there is a somewhat of a formulaic approach in this section. We talk about it being a straight line depreciation of the improvements. Some time ago, back in history, there were improvements system-wide among the Oasis system to the tune of about $83.2 million. In our discussions with SFI, we have agreed on a convenient 1/7 split of that to talk about Des Plaines. That gets you to the figure at the third bullet there of $11,885,000, which we are using as the original value for Des Plaines to do our further calculating. Again, in section 15.1 of our lease, we talk about an
IRS rule that talks about a 39-year life straight-line depreciation. There are, if memory serves, 107 months that come into play in this calculation, taking you to April 2014, depreciating at $25,435 a month. And that gets you to, again, at my fourth bullet on the page, the 9.3 and change figure that will be compensated to SFI. A quick note for how some of the math will work here. Of the 9.3, there will be 8.8 million of what we call a straight payment from the tollway, and we have agreed in as part of our negotiations with SFI to also pay $500,000, the $500,000 payment you see there in the final bullet, out of a renewal and replacement account that SFI maintains essentially for both parties' benefits for use at OASIS, on OASIS projects. So if there's any questions on displays, we can pause here. What we're going to ask for when we come back to the agenda items is an agreement to allow staff to proceed with the payable to SFI as we just discussed. We're doing a very simple but covering all the bases agreements. I think it measures about 2 or 3 pages long. It has been agreed with SFI and their council, and we're ready to execute it and take the next steps. SFI obviously is very interested in getting to the next step so they can begin discussions with their tenants who will have to make move-out plans.
Could you give just a couple of sentences on SFI? And they were not the original people who negotiated the deal. I think it may be useful in the historical context just
sure.
for everybody to understand that.
Sure, and obviously this predates me a bit, so I'll try to see if I've read my history books correctly. The original master leaseholder, and anybody should chime in who remembers some history, was a company called Wilton. Wilton ran into, as I understand it, various financial difficulties with the OASIS systems back in, somebody's memory better than mine, 2003. Does that sound like the right time frame?
No, I think it was later than that.
Was it later?
No, it was
Nine.
It was just when we came
eight,
in.
8, 9,
yeah.
I think.
It was 9.
It's listed in 9.
Okay. So SFI is essentially the party who came in on the back of this in essence was foreclosing through a party or another one of their affiliate parties called iStar. And so they're essentially on the scene by virtue of a loan foreclosure process.
Okay. I think that's an important part of it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair.
Thank
and
you.
So a lot of the numbers that turned into the fundamental for the math mechanics here date back to the original start of the lease and the original improvement values. So SFI essentially stands in the shoes of their predecessor. But that's the essence on displays, unless there's any other questions.
In the lease agreement that was negotiated contemplating the early termination with that mechanics, was there any thought back then, was there any insurance to protect the tollway from any of this going forward?
Director, I'm not familiar with any insurance coming into play as far as this type of mechanic. I haven't seen that or heard of it, frankly. Okay. So if we're okay, we'll as part of the displays discussions that obviously needed to happen, we've had a lot of good attention at senior levels within SFI and a lot of excellent attention by the staff at the tollway, and we've been able to join this discussion with discussions that have been going on from time to time about the need to rebuild parking lots out within the OASIS system. And obviously, Paul, you'll field questions if the team feels it, but Paul's engineering estimate has been standing for some time of the 6 OASIS, not including Des Plaines, of course. There has been an engineering estimate that the cost to do these would be just under $17 million. And these are a complete refurbishment of all of the parking lots, again, at the 6 OASIS outside of Des Plaines. In the last bullet on this page, you'll note we indicate it's 11 total lots. And, Paul, that's because one of the OASIS has only one lot.
Yes.
And I forget which one it is.
Des Plaines. I mean,
not Des Plaines.
The Calb is right. All on one side of the road, so...
So that's how the math works there. SFI today in their lease arrangement does have an obligation to maintain the parking lots, which is essentially a status quo requirement. Fix a pothole here and there, keep the surface fairly level, watch for cracks. And that's been going on for some time, but I think there's a definite agreement, certainly within SFI and Tollway, that reconstruction makes a lot of sense at this time. So
in our discussions, we've talked about these six oases, obviously not Des Plaines. The tollway will be leading the procurement, the design, and the construction of these lots. And essentially what we've agreed to, as the board has heard for a few months, and SFI has now completed discussions with us on it, except for some of the most minor details, is that we're going to essentially go in and split the cost of the expected 16.8, we'll round it to $17 million. SFI, though, is contributing and will contribute $8.5 million to this project. The tollways number may be a bit more, may be a bit less, because we know the engineering estimate, but we've rounded that 16.8 to $17 million, and that is the amount that SFI has agreed to step up with to contribute to this project. It breaks down in the third bullet here. It breaks down into three essential buckets for SFI. There's a new money component, which is just a straight check writing exercise to the tollway, $6.6 million. We are utilizing that renewal and replacement account that we talked about as part of Des Plaines. We talked about $500,000 in that side of the equation. We're going to use $500,000 coming to the tollway out of that account. And then 7-Eleven comes into play a bit here, as the board will know. 7-Eleven operating the gas stations and the convenience stores right there on the oases. They have a standing arrangement with SFI to contribute to a portion of the maintenance. So there have been discussions largely between SFI and 7-Eleven about how much contribution would come from 7-Eleven. They actually maintain 7-Eleven a separate renewal and replacement account to be used for Oasis projects that does require tollway approval, and we have agreed to grant that to 7-Eleven to bring $1.4 million to the SFI side of the equation in this deal. In granting that approval, we should also note that just under $1 million will come out of that renewal account and come to the tollway, so it's effectively reducing whatever portion the tollway does. We call it $8.5 million. Our half, that $8.5 will reduce. And then we have a bullet in the last one there. That's just the mechanic. As Paul and the engineering team essentially go to market here and issue notices to proceed, that will trigger a 1/11th obligation of SFI to bring the money to the tollway. So as the project comes online per lot, SFI will begin to make good on their contribution requirement. So that is the essence of the financials on the Oasis deal. And then operationally, one of the things that will happen as we bring these newer, refreshed lots on is the tollway will assume the maintenance obligations going forward. That's the essence of this page that I've just put up on the screen. SFI will retain non-structural, so let's call it the day-to-day striping, sweeping, keeping them clean, and plowing the snow. That will remain with SFI. Cracks, potholes, things where you got to come out with a crew, that's what the tollway will assume as these new lots come online for the remainder of the lease and going forward. And with that, that concludes on both of these topics.
Any questions?
Yeah, I was wondering, are there, along with this reconstruction of lots, are there design elements there or upgrades that would accommodate trucking folks, either in terms of the volume of truck parking and or the amenities that might help make them useful?
Director, we haven't contemplated any upgrades or expansions of any of the lots, but the truck parking lots themselves are the portion of the lot that's in the worst shape. And they are 50 years old, just like the original tollway system, so we really wanted to get them rebuilt. And that's the focus of this first step, is to restore, the existing lot configurations that are there.
So the base facility will be improved, but I'm wondering, are we going to be looking at it in perhaps a separate effort?
We can certainly look at that again. At this point in time, this is just to reconstruct what already exists at these facilities. So.
Right. The second question I had, and I'm just kind of trying to refresh my memory. Are there any constraints on 7-Eleven in terms of the products it provides to somewhat dampen down direct competition with the indoor Oasis providers?
There are restrictions. I believe that the provision is but hot and fresh, or I can't remember exactly what the language is in the contract.
That's what they can't do.
That's what they can't do, and I don't want to be I shouldn't be so glib about it. I should make sure you have the correct language. But there are some restrictions on 7-Eleven and what they can provide at their facility relative to the pavilion or the, you know, often over the road oasis.
I'd just like to suggest that maybe it's also a good time to look at what exactly, you know, the environment we provide for the truckers, important part of our operation, important part of our revenues, that we, you know, kind of take a look and see, are there improvements we could make for their purposes beyond, you know, having a parking lot without potholes.
Right. You know, we have looked at that in the past. We can certainly revisit it and talk a little bit. We'll pick a committee and talk a little bit about that as we're undertaking the rebuild, see if there are opportunities in the future to expand the parking or reconfigure it somehow.
I think we were happy that SFI was going to partner with us and pay for half of it, and they were fully willing to do that, you know, for the existing lots. So I would imagine the expansion would be, you know, more on the tollways time, but you certainly can look at that and try to do.
Yeah. And I wasn't necessarily talking about just expansion. I was talking about the more modern technical amenities that you find elsewhere these days.
Right. Well, when we talked to the trucking associations about what they'd like to see, I think it was more a capacity issue that's been raised rather than any other amenities.
Okay.
So, but we can certainly, you know, particularly on the capacity side, since we're going to be out there anyway, we can see if there are opportunities in the near term to if not in phase one, think about expansions in the future.
And I've always been surprised with my city engineers in terms of they look at a given parking lot. It's been that way forever. They take a good close look how they can improve sometimes by redesign the capacity itself.
Yeah. Good.
So I would just like to thank everybody. I think Director Wisner and I and Director Banks are my first meeting. The OACs were in bankruptcy, and Director Wisner took on the ad hoc committee to look at them. Wilton was going into bankruptcy, and I want to thank everybody who subsequently, and the parking lots were a big question, and how were we going to deal with them, and I think we've come a long way. Appreciate David and his staff's work and Paul's work on this, because it feels as if things are stabilized. We've got the revenue flowing correctly. We got the 7-Elevens into the other facilities, and we're now at a point where we can responsibly address some of these issues without any financial penalties to the tollway, and came out with what sounds like a very equitable and good solution with a strong partner who's willing to actually be helpful in this. So the pit in my stomach has now been repaired, and it feels as if we're in great shape.
No, I think it's a good solution.
Yeah, so thank you all very much for working on this.
Could I just add in your list of thanks, this was a true multifunctional tollway effort, and we would be remiss if we didn't mention procurement and finance, who have been major partners along this process the last few months.
Well, thank you very much for doing that. Okay. Are there any further questions on either one or two? I think we can do one, two, three, four, and then we're going to have further discussion on five. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Motion for one, two, three.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions, recusals? No. Let's go to four.
Item five is a professional service contract. It's for construction management services. They're going to be overseeing some retaining wall, noise wall, and bridge widening work on the Gina Memorial Tollway. Within the limits of Mount Prospect Road and Lee Street, it's about a 1.5 mile section. Award is recommended to Alpha Dimension Company in the amount of $3,065,313.46. That's the number I did not have available to me at the FAA committee, but we have concluded our negotiations with them, and they're coming in right where we want them to be at. They're exceeding the DB goal, and they are meeting their commitment. On this contract, the goal is 20%. They're going to come in at 30%. We recommend award.
The statement of interest respondents, number one, Accurate Group, you got listed.
Yep.
What? Were they listed as Swindell for Benish?
Yeah. So we have We had over 28 respondents, and we have been making a habit.
I got you now, never mind.
Of listing them all out.
So the four, there were four or five MBEs that were statements of interest?
On this particular item, I know that, yes, there was. Or more. Yeah, if you turn to this a little further down, you see there's even more.
On the next page, there were 28 firms that submitted on this, right, total?
And about
10 DBs.
10 DBs.
None of the DBAs you felt were qualified, I mean, to do that, this type of work at this time?
They're all qualified, but they were not selected as the most qualified. I will note, all these selections came off of bulletin 13-1. That's our professional service bulletin. There are 23 items. Four DBs were selected outright as primes out of those 23 items. And overall, the commitment to DBE firms on that bulletin, 61% of the dollars was committed to DBE firms. So they weren't selected on every item as the prime, but they were selected on four of the 23, and then they did have a significant role in most of the contracts.
Thanks.
So, I'm sorry, was there another question? No. Okay, so I think then we may be able to take 5 through 12, I'm sorry, 11. Is that right? The D. Benedetto, we will hold out, talk about in the second session, and
then
back to that.
Thank you.
Any comments on the retainage releases? Those all, I know. Those have all been reviewed by the committee. Those are all fine?
Yes.
Okay, good. So why don't we take 5 through 11 then? We have a motion. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? No abstentions or refusals? Then we go to legal. Any comments on this one? The East Hazelcrest we've discussed. Okay, may I hear a motion on that?
Motion approved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? No recusals or abstentions. State Police.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition, recusals or abstentions? Okay. Any unfinished business? Any new business?
Madam Chair.
Okay, we are here. Yes, I'm sorry, Director.
Just one thing. I just want to thank everybody, all the staff that came out this Saturday. We had our family safety fair. I had an opportunity to come out with my youngest son. It was a great partnership. I appreciate the State Police coming out, outstanding exhibit with the police dog, and doing the IDs for the kids, and all of our partners that were there. I think it was a great event. Whoever ordered the weather, outstanding.
That would be Christy.
Well, you did very well.
Thank you.
My little guy was all excited because he thought, because Radio Disney was there, that I had something to do with or worked with them in some capacity. So I haven't told him otherwise because he's been proud of me for a little bit. But I just appreciate everybody coming out. It was a great event for the toll lane, for the community. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the update. It was a great event. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, good. So what we'll do is take a motion to go into executive session. What do you think you need, a 15-minute break?
15.
Okay, so we'll come back again then at about 5 up. Okay, do the motion.
Right. We recommend a motion to proceed to executive session pursuant to certain exceptions in the Illinois Open Meetings Act, specifically Section 2C1 to discuss personnel matters at the tollway, Section 2C2 to discuss updates on collective bargaining negotiations, 2C5 to discuss real estate acquisition, and 2C11 to discuss tollway-related litigation. So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, we'll reconvene in 15 minutes. Thank you.